Hey, I hope you're doing good today. I was thinking through the word this morning, and I've had a lot of thoughts about what it must have been like in China when the People's Communist Party took over. It was about 1949, and up to that point, from what I understand, there were about 3 million Protestant Christians recorded in China. And when the communist government took over, there were a lot of concerns what would happen, because obviously they're not very pro-faith and family. And it was in 1953, just 4 years later, that they would expel every missionary, and all the work of all those missionaries before them was now in question. And people were saying, I wonder what's going to come out of this. What will be the implication of, you know, all of a sudden all the missionaries gone and this new regime that came in? And lots of concerns came up that there would be a decline in Christianity. Maybe it'd be even undone. Maybe the work of the gospel there would just fall apart without the missionaries. And then in the 80s, all of a sudden there was like this veil that got removed, and we got to peek inside of China. And the Communist Party there said they believed at that point there were 23 million followers of Jesus. But outside sources came back in and said, we think it's closer to 100 million. And I bring all that up because in the midst of what was a really challenging season, when people of faith were questioning where God would show up in this really difficult season, what arose out of all that was an amazing revival. Actually, it was the growth of the church in China, where it had become the largest church in the world. And it's estimated now, I think, over 117 million Christians. And we know, since the church is largely underground, that that's probably a pretty small number. And I love that. I was thinking about, you know, where we find those challenges and those difficulties, and we wonder what good is going to come out of it, only to later discover that God was doing things we couldn't even imagine. And it brought me back to that story we were at just a few weeks ago in Mark 5, when Jesus took the disciples over the Sea of Galilee, and they came into that area called Decapolis. Decapolis simply means 10 cities. And I told you just a few videos ago that there they found a demon-possessed man who had been living in the tombs and cutting himself, and was strong enough to break chains. I mean, it was crazy stuff. And out of that experience, the disciples, when they were ready to leave there, encountered this man who had been delivered by Jesus. I mean, set free, set in his right mind, clothed, able to have conversations like you and I. Just an instantaneous change like that. And I want to record for you what occurred with that man as Jesus and the disciples were getting in the boat ready to leave. It's there for us in Mark 5, 18 through 20, and it says, and when he, speaking of Jesus, got into the boat, he who had been demon-possessed begged him that he might be with him. However, Jesus did not permit him, but said to him, go home to your family and tell them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he has had compassion on you. And he departed and began to proclaim in Decapolis all that Jesus had done for him, and all marveled. Think about that for just a minute. He was now in a situation where, previously living in a land where all those who saw him hated him. And when they saw Jesus, who was going to deliver him, they begged Jesus to leave. They said, get out of here, because they were kind of living their own life. They'd established a life that they wanted, the way that they wanted to live it, which was ungodly. That's why even in that area there were raising pigs that you know, find in that story, that were rushed off into the sea to take all those demonic spirits and to drown. And as we were going through that whole account there of those people who didn't want anything to do with Jesus, this deliverer, God the Messiah, and this man. Well, now this man is stuck there testifying to them of who Jesus is and what he had done, and living before them in a way that they could see his changed life and hear as he proclaimed the good news of Jesus. Now let's fast forward a little bit. Jesus is going to leave. He's going to go to Tyre and Sidon, up kind of the northwest of where they're at here in the Decapolis. But then he's going to turn around and come back. He's going to come back in a little time where this one man was. And if you jump forward to the end of Mark 7 and jump into the beginning of Mark 8, you're going to see that when Jesus arrives there, well, this time it's not one man. It's many people a matter of fact, what we have recorded for this there is that there were 4,000 men, because they didn't count the ladies and the kids at that time. Sorry, ladies, it was a different season. But there were at least 4,000 men who, it says, they were following Jesus when he returned. And they would not go back to their homes, even though they were at the point of near starvation. So before, they wanted nothing to do with him. This trial's come. This man is totally transformed in their presence. And now the disciples come back, and what they realize is, holy cow, the curtain has been pulled back. And from this event where they left, where they were unwanted, where they cursed him for casting the demons out of this man, all of a sudden there was a revival. I guess we could say at least 8,000 people between women and children and everybody who were willing to perish as opposed to departing from the presence of Jesus. That's amazing stuff. And I think about our current situation, and I know many of us are wondering, what good will come out of this? What good will be the end of all this? You know, there's going to be jobs lost. There are people who lost people, and there will be some deaths. And those things occur all the time. But now it's kind of on a worldwide scale here. And we're all thinking, what is this going to produce? What's going to come out of this? What will be the end result? Well, here's what I want to say to you. I really believe Jesus is using such a time as this to draw people to himself. And maybe it's through you and I. Maybe it's through any one of us who's now going to share the good news of the gospel, who's going to live out this transformed life before other people, that when this whole thing comes to an end, when people go back to work and they go back to their job or back to school or back to those places, I'm praying that the veil or the curtain will be pulled back for us, and we'll see that there's maturity of the believers who walk through this event. And even more than that, there's a bunch of new believers. There's a revival that takes place. I've been praying for that revival. I know a lot of our conversations could be about, you know, how are we dealing with the stress? And I think those are reasonable conversations. Or what are we doing with our time? Some people have time off. Some people are busier than they've ever been. And we certainly could ask those questions. But I think as believers who are looking for eternity, you already know that whatever happens in this life, we're going to be with Jesus. I hope one of our greatest desires is that when all this is over, the church has grown around the world. Many people have given their life to Jesus. That's my prayer. I hope that's your prayer. I hope you're encouraged for that, and looking forward to it with anticipation, because I really believe that's what's going to happen. I was even reading a blog by Joel Rosenberg that said 44% of Americans believe that God is speaking and trying to get the attention of our nation right now. That's pretty outstanding. And I believe that's true. Will you believe with me? Will you pray with me for the revival? And believe that out of all this, God is going to do more than we could imagine. And hopefully we'll see it soon. Have a great week. I hope your heart's prepared for Sunday and every day in Jesus. Amen.